This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This is part two of this week's episode.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
As we move into chapter 85, I want to talk about a fun element of the writing that I felt worthy of pointing out. As Bryce continues to fight despite her body beginning to tire, she's also running out of ammo, such that when she fires, the sentences begin to become one-word sentences, and it mimics the sound of the gunshot. Bryce fired again, again, again. When the ammo goes out and she pulls the trigger to hear empty clicking, it's again one-word sentences. Out, done, empty. I thought that was a good use of the writing to mimic the action that's happening right now.
Yeah. Very good call out. SJM's great at that.
She is.
Bryce almost dies and is saved by the Viper Queen's bodyguard, one of her bodyguards. Quote, blue lights glowed along the blade, more glared along sleek black body armor and matching helmet, and across the male's chest, an emblem of a striking cobra glowed. And it's just very much like a non-Asteria moment, like we got in this episode before this, talking about like how the Asteria are gold and white and pure, and here it is. Where it's like, we're blue and black colors and cobra, rawr, and striking. And
because snakes go rawr.
Rawr. It's my universal animal noise.
I know.
Rawr. And, you know, it's a good contradiction between the two of like who's actually out there and who's not.
It is. But also notice she still sends seven of them because it's a powerful number.
Yeah. Yeah.
So over the top.
And they're willing to get down and dirty. Let's talk about Ethan and Bryce's reunion. They both save each other, and when they do, we see them mirroring one another. Quote, blood coated his navy t-shirt and jeans as much as it did her own clothes. They're coming to this fighting field as an even playing field. It's all even because, like, you know, Bryce is also all bloodied up and they're saving one another. And even in the next page, they're described as, quote, Bryce and Ethan fought side by side where one stumbled, the other did not, where one baited a demon, the other executed it. And they are a partner, a team. And it kind of needs to be this way because Ethan needs to humble himself when he comes back to Bryce. I don't think this is a humbling moment, but I think this is a moment of equal, of like, you need to respect the person you're fighting with.
Yeah.
You need to trust them that they're going to have your back. And, you know, Bryce has every right to accidentally trip and have her sword go right into him if she wants. But that's not what happens.
It's not. And I think what, for me, it does a nice setup of Sky and Breath.
Yeah.
In that we see that these two are meant, not meant to be together in a mate way, but they're meant to
be friends.
They're meant to be friends.
Yeah.
They complement each other really well. And so when Ethan gets kicked out of the den and Bryce takes him in, we're like, yeah, it's okay, even if he is a dick.
Yeah. And it's also, I'm going to be talking about Sky and Breath. So if you've somehow listened this far and not been spoiled, warning. You know, we find out in Sky and Breath that Ethan's in love with Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something, like, knowing that and reading this scene,
mm-hmm.
I can feel that more.
Yeah.
You know, before I read this, it felt like, oh, this is my friend's younger brother. But there is, like, something more dramatic to this reunion. You can almost, like, sense that.
Yeah.
In the way that it's you, right?
Yeah. It just feels like there's a lot of history.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we get a better sense of that in Sky and Breath.
Yep. Also, quote, gore splattered her sneakers, her leggings. Gotcha.
Gotcha.
Gotcha, SJM. Or rather, SJM's editor. Bryce sacrifices herself for Ethan, and it's for his sake, but it's also for Connor. And when I say sacrifice, this is the moment where she, like, pushes him in
to the bunker.
I love it because I want Ethan to feel as guilty as possible, and I want him to feel like shit. So that's the joy of this moment. I just, like, love the extra, like, the drama of the moment of just that, like, you know, she lands against the wall and he starts pounding against the, trying to get out and stuff. And it's like, yes, feel guilty.
I also saw this moment as Bryce paying forward Lahaba's sacrifice.
Uh-huh.
Lahaba sacrificed her life for Bryce. So Bryce, in some way, in her own guilt, now feels the need to sacrifice her life for Ethan's.
Yep, yep. And she says it's for Connor. Like, she well, she says, like,
it's
Connor's younger brother. Yeah.
It's Hunt's point of view.
Oh, it's Hunt's point of view. But I feel like Hunt's point of view is right.
That's always right.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's, like, for Connor's younger brother.
Yeah.
Like, there's the guilt that she has for Connor and the pack of wolves dying, or the pack of devils dying. You know, this is her redemption.
Right. Right. Redemption in her own mind. She didn't need to sacrifice herself. She chose to sacrifice herself.
Yeah, seriously. No one's asked this from you, Bryce.
Nope.
Also, more beautiful imagery from SJM. Quote, the sunset, a vibrant wash of orange and ruby, like the final battle cry of the world before the oncoming night. Bryce is alone and without a plan at the moment. She's without a plan for about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Before it comes in. And we are able to get a sense of that hopelessness just by that description of the environment. And again, note to writers or people who are just interested in the concept of writing, but it's something that I like to do, and so do others. In my final draft, I'll write, so in general, in my first draft, I'll write, like, they were sad or they were angry. And then I'll go through, catch those moments in my rewrite, and then see how I can redirect it, right? Like, so it's not like SJM said Bryce was hopeless. She said that, you know, she describes the sunset like a final battle cry,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, to find these little moments and, like, you know, look to the environment, look to other things that could describe their emotional setting. So an example of that again, quote, the only thing she could do as the light began to fade alone, she was alone out there. We're not getting Bryce's sad.
Right, right. Or that she's hopeless.
Yeah. So it's just some good show, not tell.
Yeah. SJM is very, very good at it.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to read between the lines when you read her writing.
Yeah.
Which is what makes it fun and which is why we have this podcast.
Yay.
Once again, a lot of use of red. And where we saw it in the gallery, we now see it here as the night begins to set. The sunset starts out orange and ruby. Ruby, like Micah's blood. There is blood everywhere. Lots and lots of blood everywhere. We all know blood is red. Yeah. And I don't think we've ever been told that Vanir have different colored blood. The sky then also turns red. In my mind, this scene is playing out like a horror action movie The color red is no longer empowering for Bryce like it was in the gallery. Instead, it's the reversal. It's working against her and in favor of the demons. And to me, it's as simple as in the gallery, she was in her home turf. She was playing the home game. Yep. Now she's playing the away game.
Yep.
And she's alone and stranded. And so the red brings this terror with it that we didn't feel at the gallery.
Yeah, because, you know, red is blood. And right now she's got bad blood.
Oh, my God.
You and I. Chapter 86 starts off with more beautiful descriptions, because I can't get enough of all of her descriptions at this point.
Yep.
Quote, the voids and the gates remained open. The sunset gave way to bruised purple skies. We don't need to hear that Bryce has been beaten up or that the city has been hurt. Why do you need that when you have bruised purple skies? And that perfectly captures it.
Yeah. And captures Bryce's condition.
Yeah.
This is all reinforced by Hunt's perspective. And I wanted to read this quote. One mistake, one misstep, and she would be dead. There would be no healing, no regeneration, not without the drop. Jack is going to read a quote in a moment that I'm not going to steal from her. But then there's this other quote later on as well. Quote, the stark terror on Bryce's face as she surveyed the last of the sunlight. Hunt sees that Bryce sees her death coming. And I think that a lot of that terror that he feels mirrors her own.
Yeah.
And mirrors or reinforces that idea of the bruised purple sky and whatnot. There's just a lot of hurt.
Yeah.
And death going on right now.
Yep. Unlike Bryce's battle with Micah, when Hunt viewed her as frenzied, here we see a shift. Quote, a soldier who had fought a good, hard battle. A soldier who was exhausted, but would take this moment, this last moment, to rally before their final stand. Bryce is now a soldier who has fought a good battle, and Hunt views her differently.
He does view her differently. Earlier, you read a quote where Hunt viewed Bryce as being well-trained enough to be an Ox member, as if she served in the Ox her entire life. And I think Hunt has always viewed Bryce as an equal, but it's in this moment that he, and in this battle, that Hunt respects Bryce as an equal fighter, which I think is different.
Yep.
Previously, Bryce might have been his mental, mental equal, but now physically they are also equals.
Yep. And this is when I was doing notes, where I did cry, and when Bryce calls Hunt to say her final goodbyes, and she goes through all the goodbyes, I was tearing up, and I have here, I kind of list them out to see if Amy had like different notes about it. Mm-hmm. The only note I have when she talks about her mom was, I have nothing to say to it. I will lose my shit. I can't even pretend to imagine what that would be like with my mom.
The one thing I thought of that I didn't write here is that she talks about her mom made her and, you know.
Yeah.
It made me think of the Ember secret chapter and how you see Bryce reflected in Ember.
Did you finally read it?
Nope.
Okay.
I'm just going off what everybody else said.
All right.
Am I wrong?
No.
Okay.
But you still don't get to be part of the club. Then Bryce starts to, you know, say like, tell my dad, and the Auden King kind of flinches. But she says, quote, tell Randall that I'm so proud I got to call him father, that he was the only one who ever mattered. Hunt could have sworn something like shame flitted across the Autumn King's face. Truther! Autumn King truther right here. Then she says goodbye to Rune. And I don't have notes, but do you have notes on Rune's goodbye?
Yeah, the only notes I had in this moment is that SJM to the bitter end will plant breadcrumbs. Yeah. And we're about to have the big reveal where Bryce reveals she's starborn.
Yep.
But we still don't know it yet. But there's still going to be breadcrumbs in her goodbye that lead up to this.
This moment. You know, I really feel like Rune is getting, what's that phrase called? Rung through the dryer. Like, he's just getting emotionally beat up right now.
Yeah, he really is.
Like, poor it guy. Goes from like, Rune, I just tell Rune I forgive him and I love him and I just wanted to look out for him. And then it's like, even her, when we get to the phone call with her mom, it's like, she did it because she loved Rune, and Rune's over here being like, What did I do? I was nothing but nice to you. And then Bryce's goodbye to Hunt has her putting her hand over her heart, very similar to what the Prime was doing, saying that, like, you know, she was waiting for him, but it's like, it, you know, this shows that Hunt is part of her pack. She's a lone wolf. He's a lone wolf. Together, two wolves. That's called math.
When Bryce puts her hand over her heart, it also makes me think about the fact that the truth is about to be revealed. It's not until Hunt unlocks Bryce's heart that she's once again able to access her starlight. And that's going to come back again in the next chapter. I also want to point out something that we see on the cover of this book. There is a heart-shaped lock over the chest of the woman on the front cover.
Yeah.
And to me, that's really speaking to this moment where Bryce was waiting for Hunt to show up and unlock her heart.
Yeah. Can't think of a Taylor Swift quote off the top of my head, but, you know, there's just so many. After saying her goodbyes, Bryce is ready to take off to the gates. Quote, she opened her eyes, got to her feet as true night fell. As someone who is true light, it makes sense that Bryce needs to lose all of the light and step into the darkness, into true night, to let her light shine.
Shine bright like a diamond.
Oh my God. That was not planned. Chapter 87, we see Bryce's light for the first time. For a light that's just a light, there's a whole lot of use of color to describe it. Quote, a faint white radiance. The light she held was so stark, it contrasts the rest of the world into grays and blacks. Slowly her eyes open, amber blazing like the first pure rays of dawn. Clever use of colors to describe light, you know, that's just light.
Yeah. And I also want to point out that the light grows in brilliance. It starts out small and faint until it's bright as a sun. And her eyes end up reflecting that sun because, in my mind, she's the dawn of hope after the night has set in. Hunt makes a point to say that light is drawn from her, quote, shattered heart, as if her heart is a bottle that's been broken and the sun has escaped its confinement. And I just thought that was a beautiful
It's image. So beautiful, I don't even remember it. Like, you read that, and I was like, damn. Was that in it?
The whole bottle being broken?
Yeah.
No, that's me.
No. Oh, no, I meant, like, the sun.
Shattered heart?
Yeah, that was you.
The shattered heart quote?
As if the bottle that's been broken and the sun escaped its confinement, that was
you? Oh, no, I wrote that.
Good job.
Thanks. Thank you. That's the image that scene elicited in my brain.
Good job. I see what you're doing here.
Thanks.
Flexing some writing skills.
So we see the same concept of Bryce's heart being unlocked or being opened and the starlight coming out when we get the flashback scene that reveals the full truth about Danica and Bryce's motorcycle accident. Quote, I love you, Danica said again. Danica had never said those words to her, not to anyone Bryce knew, not even Sabine. Bryce watched the tears roll down Danica's proud, fierce face. A lock clicked open in Bryce's heart, her soul. Just like Bryce wore Danica's jacket and brought Hunt's guns, only Danica and Hunt have achieved the necessary connection to Bryce to truly open her heart and allow Bryce to share her gift with the world. While I would like to gripe about the placement of this flashback, it is, I think, necessary.
The placement's a good placement.
It is a good placement when you tie the connection of the starlight and Bryce's heart being unlocked. However, I have to acknowledge that it's been a long time since we've had a flashback to this memory.
It's what my complaints have been.
Which, yes, is correct. Early on, there were so many of these references that we were relieved by the time they stopped because they weren't revealing anything anymore. In my mind, they were long enough ago that I stopped caring about what happened, which also kind of makes it okay that it's here, that it's been so long. I'm very, very conflicted about this moment.
Because I just edited episode 12, there was a moment after her and Rune kind of come to a tentative peace and stuff. And this is before Hunt, it's like after Hunt's arrested and before she, like, you know, says buy me instead.
Yeah.
That was a moment that I said, like, this would have been a good time for her to have a flashback, because Rune's like, why won't you be friends with me, essentially?
Yeah.
This, like, we did need more of this. We needed one more bigger reveal. I don't think that it's been done well until this placement. And where it's located geographically in the story makes sense.
Yeah, I think I agree. I would have changed more of the lead up to this, of the placement of the earlier clues about this moment.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the overarching picture, it doesn't quite work for me.
No.
However, what also is good about this, so as we've said, we like the placement of it here in connection with the starlight. It also makes Danica's reappearance, which we don't talk about in this episode.
Thank God.
Thank God. But it makes Danica's reappearance, when it does happen, even more emotional, because we've just gotten Danica here.
Yep. Good point.
What I like about the use of the sun in connection with Bryce, both in the flashback as well as the current scene, is that it makes her seem like a force to be reckoned with, that she embodies the sun. Like Jack said, there's a lot of clever use of color. The world is being bleached into blinding white throughout this scene, and this scene being the flashback scene, so that when Bryce returns to normal, she eventually is able to just see the blue skies and the olive trees come back. What I liked about this is that as she exhibits her starlight, Bryce is otherworldly, she is celestial, she's in space, even her hair defies gravity. It's as if she's on a different plane of existence compared to those around her. And as she's being grounded again and seeing the blue skies and the olive trees, she's at the same time grounded by the wonder and love of Danica. And it's just this really beautiful thing that's happening. She expects Danica to be horrified.
Yeah.
But instead, Danica is
in awe of her.
In awe of her, and continues to love her. And that's the grounding force.
Yeah.
In this flashback.
Yep.
That will keep her grounded until she loses Danica.
Yep.
So it's just pretty.
It is a pretty. Just a pretty. Bryce reveals the clues that she's starborn. And this is like the moment where it's Esham's like, there have been clues the whole time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm like, there are clues, but some of them. Anyway, let me get into it. So one of the clues is like how she acted around Rune, and how she even says, like, I thought it was almost so obvious how little I cared about Starborn. And I'm just like, that. I didn't feel like that was a very.
I didn't either.
You just don't like talking to him. And then, you know, there's also the thing of like how the blade called to her. I don't really remember any particular moment because we weren't in her head, but, you know, okay, I'll give it to that. And then there's this, which made me laugh. Quote, even the Crystallos venom in her leg had not been able to stifle the essence of what she was. It had blocked her access to the light, but not what lay stamped in her blood. The moment the venom had come out of her leg, as Hunt's lips had met hers for the first time, she felt it awaken again, freed. Remember when we were like, holy shit, the venom came out and then her light came through. This is amazing. Yeah. Yeah, she did that on purpose.
Yeah.
You and I thought we were real clever.
Did we?
Yeah. I said it, and then you were like, whoa!
I don't remember that, but I believe you.
It was like not even in my notes. I just was like, oh, what if blah, blah, blah. And then you're just like, yeah, and we got really excited about it.
And then Estram's like, yeah, that's exactly what I had planned the entire time.
And then she
time.
Has like a little note saying, yeah, dumb bitches, pay attention to what I write. Yes. Oopsies, forgot that. That's my note right there. But I feel like it does show that SJM did leave breadcrumbs and we picked it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, we did what we were supposed to do.
We analyzed successfully.
Yeah. I struggle a little bit with Bryce's mentality, though, because previously we heard her say that she felt like she was nothing compared to her friends, right? That she wasn't particularly special. And that's why she partied, because they were on an even playing field. And then this, quote, blessed as if the gift made her something special. It didn't. It was an old power and nothing more. She had no interest in the throne or crown or place that could come with it. None. And it's just like, what more do you want to be special? You're a secret princess.
Mm.
You're starborn mm-hmm. with power that no one's had since the OG starborns. And she's still like, it's just nothing special. But she has this whole like, I'm not good enough thing. And I know that this is the power is just light and it's not like power, but it'd be one of those moments where if she was my friend, I'd be like, babe, no, you get off whatever horse you're on.
Mm-hmm.
You're sad. I'm not important horse and see that you're special.
My thoughts around this are Bryce does not view herself in terms of the Fae. She views herself and values herself in terms of her humanity. And to be starborn and to be a princess are purely Fae things that she has rejected.
Mm-hmm.
And so for her to view herself as a human and to value her humanity, to value how her father has trained her, does feel less special than her Vaynir friends who have power. Because although her starborn powers are just light, it doesn't come with the ability to pick up things magically or alter people's minds. How Bryce identifies is what her human body is capable of and what her human parents taught her. Mm-hmm. And to her, I think that does not put her on an equal playing field with her friends.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying. It's still a struggle, and I'm not going to use this correctly, but it gives me hints of pick me.
I understand.
And it's just kind of the, like, I get very, it's like, what is it then? Because it's like, you're upset that your friends and you guys aren't on even playing field. You're upset that they're special and you're not, except all of these things that showing that you are special.
Yeah.
And she even says, like, the quote is, it was an old power, nothing more.
Yeah.
What? And it's like, okay, if you don't view yourself through the lens of the Fae, you view yourself through the lens of humans and that's their value. Why are you still comparing yourself to these, like, your Vaynir friends who compare them through the human compassion lens? They don't pass the merit test.
Right.
So it does give me the, like, pick me vibes of nothing I do is good enough to be special.
Right.
And I don't know if that's like, if that makes sense to her character. It does, in the sense that, like, SJM has done these moments throughout the whole book of being like her being insecure.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense in that way. I just struggle with that.
I think that's fair. And I think it's okay for us to say that it's kind of got pick me vibes. I think that this is part of Bryce's overarching journey.
Yep, yep.
That
yep.
she has to come to terms with.
Yeah.
And this is just the first step, right? We're going to see her continue to struggle with this concept of being starborn and being Fae and being chosen in both Sky and Breath and Flame and Shadow. So I'm okay with it that there's this dichotomy
mm-hmm.
and almost inconsistency within her.
Yeah.
Because she's, it is still a mental struggle for her.
Yeah. It will be, now that we've gone through this deep dive, having this lens of what we've been talking about and then going to read book 3
mm-hmm.
and how she handles the ending and the conclusion there, it'll be good to read that. I'll have to listen to this whole season.
I know. I'm going to have to do a season recap episode.
For ourselves.
Yep.
One of the things SJM does very well, it's mirroring and bookending. Quote, the quartz of the gate was a conduit, a prism, able to take light and power and reflect them. She closed her eyes, remembering the rainbows this gate had been adorned with in the last day of Danica's life, and when they come together, made their wishes. It mirrors. And it bookends.
Wow.
It's a bookend mirror.
It's a parallel.
It's a... No. That's... fuck.
I was like, no, I'm not picking my nose, ma'am. Don't... you don't... I don't need the tissues.
Gonna throw something at you. You're right. That is just... You're like, that's called parallel. Fuck. All right.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. That's good. You're just... right. Chapter 88. We are back at the summit. And everyone is shocked. And Rune is on his knees. And then this is like one of my by far moments is the Ember Quinlan of it all phone call. I reread this section and chapter, I think like 4 times.
Oh, really?
Just for fun.
Just because.
I love it.
Because if you read what Ember Quinlan says, it sounds like you.
What? Yeah, but okay.
I mean, imagine it. If Bryce was your daughter, yeah.
I mean, the fact that, like, he calls her and she's like, who is this? And he starts yelling and she's like, I've been waiting for this phone call for 20 years. Let's go, bitch.
It sounds like something you would say.
I channel my Ember. Yeah, if we want to know what I'm going to be like as a mom, Ember Quinlan.
Ember Quinlan.
Yep.
In this scene, Hunt is instantly in protective mode. While he is in awe of Bryce and her starbornness, he's also worried for her safety because the truth that she's revealed makes her a threat. Who is she a threat to? She's a threat to Rune. So therefore, Hunt views Rune as a threat because what if Rune, as a typical Fae, is like, wait, but
yeah,
this is my birthright.
Yep, yep.
Quote, Bryce was Rune's rival, a threat to all he stood to inherit. Hunt knew what the Fae did to settle disputes to the throne. I mean, think about any Fae.
But then it, like, pans over to Rune, and then I think of the quote, I'm going to exaggerate, but it's like, Rune was on his knees, sobbing, no, like, guilt or, like, no envy on his face, and he's just like, what?
Yeah, he's just like my baby sister.
I was not going to kill her, guys.
What is sad for me is that even though Hunt and Rune have been slowly building a relationship, they were at each other's throats earlier in the book. Not so much now. Hunt is in such protective mode, he doesn't even think about giving Rune the benefit of the doubt. Later on, Hunt will even tell Rune flat to his face, quote, she lied because she loves you, Hunt ground out, so you could keep your title. Because compared to the Starborn powers he'd seen from Rune, Bryce's were the real deal. Basically, he's calling Rune out for his small dick energy.
How? Okay. I knew that was blasphemous. How dare you?
His small starborn.
Thank you.
Energy.
All right.
I know he's probably well endowed.
We can only hope.
Yeah.
You said something like, you know, now Hunt is like saying like she loves you. You know, they're now kind of like on the same side. Yeah. Now that he knows that that's her brother. And isn't a love rival.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It's true.
Because they talked about it being cousins, but, like, it was always, like, distant cousins, you know?
This is true. And it's not until recently he's like, oh, Rune's your brother.
Yeah, and now suddenly it's like, she loves you. If he would never have said that.
If they were still cousins.
Yeah. Like, kissing cousins.
It's true.
Ember is ready, as we were talking about a little bit, of the Autumn King when he calls, and he is furious at her, and she doesn't miss a second or a beat, and even laughs at him as she tells him the truth that Bryce blinded his soldiers. Like, I just love, she's like, who do you think did that to your goons? And the fact that, like, Bryce couldn't trust the Autumn King, and she's like, you did that. And Bryce loved Rune so much more than she hated the Autumn King. Like, I know you don't know that Rune is listening, but you're really trying to make Rune feel guilty, and he did nothing.
I don't know if it's about guilt.
No, I feel like this is SJM I'm talking to.
Like, oh, okay. I don't think Ember's trying to make Rune feel guilty.
No, it just feels like every single blow. I mean, but I love a groveling guy, so, you know, here I am.
Well, to me, what it is, he's such an emo boy. He doesn't understand his own worth. And he's also probably never really felt loved other than by his simple mother. And so
his
he's
simple mother? Wow.
He basically calls his mom a simple woman. He calls his mom a simple woman.
Women supporting women.
I'm just saying what Rune said. But I think all Rune has ever wanted is for Bryce to love him. And now he's finding out, wait, she loved me this entire time?
Yeah, it's like, all he wanted was someone to, his sister to love him.
Yeah.
So it's like, find out the way that she loves you in the most devastating way while you watch her almost die.
Right. And, oh, she's been ignoring me because she loves me?
Yeah,
what?
Like all this time? Yeah, it's kind of like SJM is making, it's just making him hurt on purpose. Yep. I thoroughly approve.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
The Autumn King then throws a pitcher of water from across the room and loses control. And I want to say, I recognize it. Not healthy. Not a fan of violent outbursts. The chapter ends with Hypaxia unlocking Hunt and freeing him from his little halo crown.
His little black halo. I have to say, SGM does a really, really good job ending the chapter so that you want to know what happens next.
Yeah.
And I wrote this, I think, because of some of the audiobooks I've been listening to lately, and it's not necessarily the ones that we're doing for book club. It's other audiobooks where the chapter doesn't have to end with someone saying something earth-shattering for yeah. you to want to continue writing
yep.
or reading, or where you think, dun, dun, dun. And I think that I've seen that a lot in the romanticies I've been reading lately, or just romance books in general.
Yeah.
SGM does end some chapters with a piece of dialogue that is impactful, but she switches it up enough with impactful prose that when it's a dialogue over prose ending, it doesn't feel cheap.
Yeah, agreed.
So I just want to point that out because...
Can you read the last... You have the book on you. I just want to know what those last words...
Sorry.
It's okay. So yeah, go ahead and read us those last words that you're talking about.
Sure. And this, I mean, this is a good one, but she has many good ones. This is the last sentence. Two sentences or whatever. His Bryce. Hunt's attention narrowed on the back of Sandriel's neck, and he rose to his feet as Hypaxia's magic dissolved the halo from his brow.
It is such a great... It's done, done, done without done, done, done.
Yeah, it is. Without him saying, and now no. my halo's gone. Or gasp, Rune said.
His halo's gone.
Gasp. Rune said.
You felt real good about yourself earlier with that sun in a bottle thing.
Gasp. It's a Friday night and I'm tired.
Gasp.
Wait, we're still going to go work out after
Are we?
This.
We'll see. Gasp, Rune said.
One chapter left. We can do it. Okay. Stop it. Gasp.
In the start of chapter 89, Hunt kills Sandriel, and the killing, it doesn't last that long. I mean, like, it slowed down, but it doesn't last as long as it did for Micah. And for someone who thought that Bryce killing Micah was frenzied, Hunt's killing is even more aggressive, is like what we were saying earlier. Mm-hmm. He holds Sandriel's head. Like, he fills her up with lightning, and then he rips her head off of her body with his bare hands. And, like, all of it is understandable, but I have a lot of thoughts on this in the breadcrumbs.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
What I like about this area, even though the time doesn't get slowed down as much, there is a lot of content about how powerful Hunt is yeah. in this brief period that yeah. his halo is off. First of all, the Archangel, Sandriel, is slower than him by comparison. Then, quote, Hunt slowly lifted the head before him as if he were one of the ancient heroes of the Roggen Sea serving a slain creature, a monster. he's the hero, she's the monster.
Yep.
It's very, you know, fairy tale-esque. And then finally, he flays her from the inside out.
Yeah.
And that's a cooking skill. So, you know, food is power.
Angels get into line real fast. Quote, the angels in the room all knelt on one knee, bowed. Even wide-eyed Isaiah. How did I even wide-eyed Isaiah Tiberian. No one on the planet had that sort of power. No one had seen it fully unleashed in centuries. I don't know why I had it for room discussion.
I think it just goes back to my earlier point. There's a lot of power here.
There's a lot of power in the room. I mean, and it's like a, you know, this moment will come back in the third books.
Yeah.
2 books from now. We get this quote, and I really wish we saw more of this in the next book. Quote, hunt through the Autumn King, a feral grin. Rune felt a sick amount of satisfaction as his father went pale. And I just wish there was like more of Hunt feeling powerful. Mm. We don't really see that again. And there isn't that big of an impact. And I get it. Like his mental state isn't, I'm a big, bad, powerful guy. His mental state is like, just happy to be free.
Yeah.
Don't want to go back into that. But they make such a big thing of the angels bowed and got down on one knee. And, you know, he has a feral grin. Mm-hmm. And we don't have that again.
Yeah, I wonder to what extent it's almost this feral grin is a product of his bloodlust in this moment.
Yeah.
That he's riding the high of killing Sandriel. Because you're right, he gets very in his head about here to be free, not to be greedy or whatever.
Yeah.
I also chalk up a lot of how Hunt is treated more around his Umbra Mortis mythology rather than this moment. I think his Umbra Mortis persona carries more weight.
Yeah.
And to what extent is this the Umbra Mortis over Hunt at his true form? We've seen a lot of parallels and mirroring in this episode, and I just wanted to point out another one. Bryce and Hunt both get to kill an archangel and a governor.
Woo!
And what I like about this is that when they kill their respective archangels, when Bryce kills Micah, when Hunt kills Sandriel, they are using the most innate power available to them. Hunt, his lightning. Bryce, her ability to use human weapons. And to me, that makes them equal, not because from one point of view, you could say, well, Hunt's more powerful because he's Vanir and he's got lightning and nobody else has lightning. Mm-hmm. But to me, they're able to access the most powerful parts of themselves. And through that, we're able to kill archangels. And I think that makes them equals.
Yeah.
And as we've seen, Hunt respects Bryce.
Yep.
For the ability that she has.
I think that they definitely end this book much more equals than either of them realize.
Yeah, I agree.
And part of a little bit to their detriment.
Yeah, also true.
Hunt gets back into the swing of things. Quote, every decision, every order flowed from a long, quiet place within Hunt. And this is exactly what happened with Bryce when she was freed of the Crystallos demon venom. Like, immediately it was like something inside her clicked and started to flow out. It was her light. And once Bryce and Hunt were free, Hunt being free of his crown, their true gifts are able to shine through.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I didn't realize that my note repeated your note. So yes, more power to you.
Yay. And allow me to submit into evidence that Fury is a bad friend.
Once again.
Hunt asks her if she knew about Bryce wanting to kill herself. And even Rune wants to hear about it. Both feel devastated knowing about how bad it got and that they had no idea. Of course, Hunt wouldn't know. He didn't really know her. But, like, you know, everyone's, like, really, like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I had no idea. And Fury says, quote, Bryce was a ghost for a long while, Hunt. She pretended she wasn't. But she was. You brought her back to life. That's not an answer. Because either A, you didn't know and you feel guilty, then just say it.
Yeah.
Or B, you did know. And that makes you even worse of a friend because you never came back to check in on her.
And I want to submit into evidence why you shouldn't always end a chapter with a quote. Because this is, you brought her back to life is the last thing that's said. And that's supposed to be the impact, right? That like, oh, Bryce was brought back to life by Hunt. Instead, we're like, yeah, that's great. But Fury, you're a bitch. You never called Bryce.
Yeah.
Even after you knew she wanted to end her life. Like, really?
Either you didn't know or you, which like, just say it, but you're
she
like,
obviously did.
Well, she, I don't know if she obviously did though. Because to me, that's a very I didn't know answer. Like, she, like, I think it's safe to say, like, she was a ghost for a long time. That's
fine.
I don't, I'm not saying that she didn't know. I have no opinion on, like, whether she did or didn't know.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's obvious one way or the other. I just think that she's a bad person either way.
Well, I think earlier, when Bryce and Fury were in Bryce's apartment, I thought Bryce said, oh, obviously, June told Fury about that night. Oh,
yeah, you're right. You're
so
right.
So Fury does know. And Fury is hedging. Because she's a bad friend. And she doesn't want to own up to the fact that she did know and didn't do anything about it.
I'm so disappointed in Fury. In so many regards.
Yep. Right. I mean, honestly, maybe she didn't. The reason why she didn't have any screen time in any of the other books is because she didn't deserve it.
Thank you. Kill her off.
Yeah, that's fair. Now, moving on to our non-multiverse breadcrumbs. In chapter 80, we see Bryce ready her shot to kill Micah in two seconds, which she will repeat at the end of Flame and Shadow.
Oh, yeah, she will.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's cool.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, you're right. Oh, that's awesome. In chapter 81, as Hunt watches Bryce light Micah on fire, he thinks, quote, vengeance incarnate, wrath's bruised heart, she would bow for no one. Hunt's lightning sang at the sight of that brutal, beautiful face. Like, his lightning's literally singing for her because he was made for her. His lightning was made for her.
That's right. In chapter 83, quote, Jessup Aroga made no attempt to contact the Underking, but kept her eyes fixed on the feeds. Her face was ashen. Maybe because she's reliving her own trauma from many, 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 many years ago.
Yep. In chapter 85, as Bryce and the Viper Queen's Fae soldiers fight the demons, Bryce observes, quote, but more of Hell's worst thundered and soared for them. Thunder reminds me of lightning. Maybe it's a clue to Hunt's ties to Hell.
Maybe. Also in chapter 85, quote, all shifters were at least three times the size of normal animals, but Ethan had always been larger. Maybe because he's prime material.
Because he's an SJM character and all SJM males have to be bigger
than
anything. In chapter 80, I mean, that's not done with shade. Same. In chapter 87, quote, she never done it before. Holy remove the star itself. She has one of three parts of the original star with Thea. She can remove it just like Thea could remove hers and put it into her daughters, as we can see in Flame and Shadow.
I just thought that was important.
That is important. It's cool.
In chapter 88, while everyone at the summit watches Bryce go Super Saiyan, I can tell you wrote this, quote, Bryce possessed the light of a star such as hadn't been witnessed since the first wars. Jessup looked like she'd seen a ghost because she was there.
Super Saiyan. In chapter 89, quote, the angels in the room all knelt on one knee, bowed. Even wide-eyed Isaiah Tiberian. No one on this planet had that sort of power. No one had seen it fully unleashed in centuries. Because he has power, his powers come from Hell. That's why no one's seen it.
Yep.
Also,
and it's not of this planet.
Yeah. And you're not going to choose to be powerful. It's just annoying. It's the like bowing scene not coming into play in the third book.
Yeah.
It was very much like he's going to be the leader of the angels.
Yeah.
And he's like, psych.
You know, just what?
Isaiah. But maybe that's actually a clue.
It is.
Like the fact that he's saying even wide-eyed Isaiah, which is who he's going to assign to be lead of the angels.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now we're going to get into just a couple multiverse thoughts and breadcrumbs. In chapter 81, when Micah dies, quote, the death of an archangel of a world power could shudder through time and space. A second could last an hour, a day, a year. What other SJM worlds might have felt this power or might have had time stand still?
I think that when I was doing, when I was like thinking of this, mm-hmm. I was trying to do the math, and I think timeline wise, we're in Silver Flames.
Yes.
In ACOTAR. So I'm just curious. Like, it was just the way that it was said, like, you can feel it shape, like, pause, like time stopped in other worlds. I would love to go back and
into Silver Flames.
Find
yeah.
that moment of like, felt like time stopped.
I would not be surprised if there is a reference.
Yeah. In chapter 88, if Bryce willed it, the horn could open a portal to any world, any realm, just as Micah had wanted to do. But that kind of power, belonging to a half-human no less, could endanger the sovereignty of the Asteri, and the Asteri would take out any threat to their authority. Nice setup for Sky and Breath, however, they're not going to take her out. They're going to take her in. That's what they're going to try to do.
Right.
Yeah.
That's fair. In chapter 89, Hunt rips off Sandriel's head. Quote, and from Hunt's hand, gripped by the hair, dangled Sandriel's severed head. Her mouth was still open in a scream. Hunt slowly lifted the head before him as if he were one of the ancient heroes of the Ragan Sea, surveying a slain creature, a monster. I put this in here because it reminds me of Wings and Ruin with Nesta and the King of Highburn. Mm-hmm. Is this moment purposefully mimicked so that we are mentally connecting Prithian and Lunathian?
Yes, because someone sent this on Instagram, and luckily I caught it while we were recording. So, you know, no one ever gets this kind of
serendipity.
Yeah. So Kendra from Instagram says, OMG, I'm rereading Silver Flames and just noticed that Nesta has a figurine that looks exactly like the Embrace, except with a moon instead of Solace. Y'all talk about the Embrace a lot, and I know this has to mean something, and here it is. It was a fire not of her father's neck. Her gaze shifted to the carved wooden rose she'd placed on the mantle, half hidden in the shadows beside a figurine of a suppled body female, her upraised arms clasping a full moon between them, some sort of primal goddess, perhaps even the mother herself.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can't wait till we do read Silver Flames, because just like we're talking about here, I bet SJM planted visual cues mm-hmm. in both books to link them together. And I think yeah. Hunt holding Sandriel's head the way Nesta held
it's
the King
so
of Highburn's
Wings and Ruin.
Yeah, there's yeah. just, there's so many similarities.
Yeah, it is funny, like, reading some of these things where it's like, it can open the world to literally anything. And here's a book that has the same name as something of your other book.
I know.
She doesn't even try.
She does not even try.
We're just too busy
I
judging.
Mean, she tries. We don't. We fail.
We fail. It was, like, she's just like, guys.
It's gonna happen.
It was there.
Yeah.
The whole time. Would you like to talk about this week's Bryceism?
Yes, since I forgot I wrote this week's Bryceism, and it's not the Bryceism I put at the front of the episode. This week's Bryceism is help those who are less fortunate, even when it's not easy.
Yeah, yeah, remember that.
And that's hard.
It is hard going out of your way
yeah.
to help.
Yeah.
Especially like when you're busy and there's always a million reasons why you shouldn't, or you're like, you know, like, oh, I'm busy, I'm on my way, I'm right. doing something, but, you know. Unless it's a strange man who's asking for help, say no. Help children or other women. I can't, because that's how Ted Bundy got some of his victims.
That's fair. I will say the one thing I will always try to do is if I see someone who looks like they need food, mm-hmm. I will give them any food I have.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that, I can't go with you, sir, but I can give you some food.
No, that's agreed. And even just like, you know, helping an old person cross the street, you know, mm-hmm. like just little things, like lose a few minutes
yeah.
to what you're trying to do and where you're going to help someone.
Yeah. I can afford a $15 lunch. You can yeah. take the lunch I packed or
exactly.
whatever the case is.
Unless it's a man, then we don't help them. I just think Ted Bundy. I don't want people helping Ted Bundy.
If they're on the street and I'm in my car, I will give them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fine. You know what he would do? He would like have a pretend. He would put his arm in a cast.
Yes, yes.
And ask women to help, like,
yeah,
load
help.
Something.
Yep, yeah, yes, 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 yes. I will never do that.
Bryceism.
Don't help a man put stuff in his car if he's got a cast on.
Yeah, absolutely. Amory.
Yes.
Got a question.
Yes.
Are the various elements and surprises convenient or earned?
You cannot tell me that after nearly 800 pages. This is not earned.
Boy, does she earn this.
She worked so hard.
Yeah.
To earn every moment that we just read. Does it feel convenient that the antidote is by the bullet in the safe? No, because we saw Bryce put it there.
We saw that why she put it there. She was like kind of angry. She didn't want to look at it. It reminded her of Hunt.
Right. Is it convenient that she killed Micah with a gun? No, because we saw the gun. We've seen her shoot the gun. Mm-hmm. Like,
is it convenient that her synth healed her all up?
No, because it was killing her. Yeah. And we saw her take the antidote.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything, even the starlight, isn't convenient. There have been clues this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a single moment, at least in this set of chapters that we just covered, and in the majority of this last set of the book, the last 25% or so, it's all earned. And I think that's why SJM's books are always accused of the last 25% being really fast. It's because she spends the first 75% laying the groundwork for the last, for the last 25%.
And you can see that with, like, every single one of her books, where it's like, you know, even in ACOTAR, in the first book with Farrah's trials, it's like every single one of those, like, you know, her with the Midgard worm, like, there's, you know, so many things of, like, well, she was a hunter, this is how she did things, you know, like, oh, she doesn't know how to read. Like, all these things got to a point where you're like, ah, yes, this is why all this stuff is happening.
Yep. Yeah. And that's just SJM's signature.
Yeah.
And by this book, she's perfected it.
And considering that it's almost 800 pages, and I would say you and I have only had maybe a handful of criticisms or critiques or things that we would change. Not even anything that was seriously like, this is the dumbest thing ever. You really lost us here. This doesn't make any sense. Things that we would just change. That's really good for 800 pages.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I mean, I think Thorns and Roses was one of her most tightly written books.
Yep.
And so is this one. And it's hard for me to tell you which one is better written. The only reason why this one gets a ding is because the motorcycle flashbacks.
I think ACOTAR, for me, is better written because she's trying to do more in this.
She is trying to do more in this.
And by having more things happen, and because we know where it goes, it adds some dings to it.
Yeah.
ACOTAR, it wasn't trying to set up the rest of the books the way that this one was.
Yeah.
So I think I would then argue that we were approaching this one more critically than we did ACOTAR.
Yeah.
So I do like ACOTAR more because it is more tightly written, but it's written in the sense of like, she doesn't know what's going to happen all the way down to Silver Flames.
Right.
You know, she's not trying to plan this huge world and this whole thing that she has going on.
Right.
Try not to say any spoilers, but she's doing a lot here for a lot of setup, and that is going to automatically put her up for more quote unquote failures, but I don't think they were necessarily failures.
Right. Right. No, that's a great point. There's just a lot more threads and it's a lot to try and weave.
Yeah. And because we know where the threads go or don't go, I'm going to have like a much more critical eye to it and, you know, fine tooth comb.
Yep.
But, you know, at the end of the day, good job, SJM.
Good job, SJM. I couldn't do it.
No.
At least not yet.
Not yet. I'll work up to that. But I've accepted my lane. Until I can make writing my full-time job and let my brain full-time think about it.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, romance baby.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Next week, we will be exploring chapters 90 through 97 of House of Earth and Blood.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you are enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo. You can also follow us on TikTok or Instagram at the handle booktalkforbooktalk. Bye! Bye. The sky then also turns red. I need to...
That was not a puppy being stabbed. That was Amy sneezing.
Oh, man. You used to call it butterfly farts.
It's the progression of your sneeze. What?
Sorry, I was trying to not wrinkle my forehead. I realized I was wrinkling my forehead.
The look you gave me was scowling to, oh God.
I need a...
What did I do? What did I do wrong?